trying to hook up for literally years now. You know him as Kuyap, head of Nerds Rule the World, host of the Show Pal Show and 12 other podcasts. He's now a filmmaker, an actor, a comic book writer. This dude has done it all. Please welcome, for the first time to Southern Fried Asian, Kuyap himself, Patrick Michael Strange.
Hey, what up? Yo, I am so hyped, man. Nerds of Color fam, fam for life, NOC. Love y'all, man. Just great to be finally on here, you know, because I am Southern Fried.
I've been Southern Fried Asian since the podcast launched.
Word. I'm like, I've got my Southern Fried diploma. It's hanging up right behind me. You don't see it right now because this is audio. But I've been Southern Fried for a long time, man. So I appreciate that I finally have the honor and the opportunity to speak with my man Keith and become part of this Southern Fried Asian family.
Of course, of course. You know, it's funny too, because I've been wanting to have you on, of course, knowing that you're from the South. But the thing is, like, all these years we've known each other, I don't know what part of the South you're from, because I know you're a military brat.
Yeah.
So
Can't claim nothing.
So before we get started, and this is a loaded question to ask any Asian American, but where are you really from?
Wow. Yeah, we do that on the, that's the first question we do on Show Pal Show, just to break the that stereotype, break that monolith. Born in San Diego, California. So I'm American people, but.
Well, that goes without saying if you're on this really podcast.
My mom is Panay from Cavite City in the Philippines. And my dad, doing my research, we always thought he was Irish, but apparently he's more so English by way of England, doing some of that, you know, ancestry DNA results. So yeah.
Wait, so your dad ain't a master of the mystic arts?
No, he's not. He's not the master of the mystic arts. But yeah. So I'm one of those by my father. You know, I think he came over with like settling. You know, with the still tracing that, you know, that DNA stuff. But my mom, they met when my dad was in the military. So I'm a military brat through and through, fourth generation when I finally went in, but they met in the Philippines. And I get told, you were made in Japan. And I'm like, that's too much information, mom and dad.
Oh, God damn.
You know, there's like, you might as well get a, with all those tattoos, get a made in Japan tattoo on your foot or something. Like, I don't need that, mom. That's too much.
Yeah, I don't like that at all. So what I meant, I didn't need the whole Ancestry.com.
No,
I meant, what part of the South are you from?
Because
as a military brat,
this is Southern Fried Asian.
I don't care that you Filipino and made in Japan. Well, I need to know.
Well, you said it's a loaded question. So part of that load is taking it back there. But
you were born in San Diego, but you grew up most of your childhood, most of your upbringing was in parts of the South.
The parts of the South. Again, grew up all over being a military brat, but the majority of my time, my youth into teenage years, was spent in the South, Charleston, South Carolina area, particularly Goose Creek Naval Weapons Station. Hell yeah, the Gators, because that's where I graduated high school. But yeah, grew up there, and then another set of 4 years was spent in the Deep South, the Mississippi Panhandle, if you will, Gulfport, right next to Biloxi. Mm. Neighboring town there. And
which is another, I mean, these are military towns too. Like that's
Military town through and through.
And then I learned right before we hopped on, you actually spent most of your like adult life in Virginia.
Yes.
You also joined the military.
Up until now, living in Virginia now.
You currently live in Virginia, but you joined the military, joined the Navy. So you moved to Norfolk, Virginia right after high school.
Yeah.
And what we just learned is that we spent 4 years in the same fucking town.
Probably stumbled across each other, passing each other, man, because I was all over hitting things up, living that Navy young life.
I gave you a stink eye because I was like, I think around that time I was like a goth alt kid. Right, looking at the Navy kids like, what them motherfuckers doing over here?
Yeah, dude. That's crazy that we probably could have stumbled across each other. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. Like, I'm sure you hit up MacArthur Center.
Oh, dude.
I'm sure you went to Military Highway.
Man, I used to tell everybody Lynn Haven Mall was my
Lynn Haven. Well, that's where all the Filipinos were.
Exactly, right? I had a girl in every corner of the food court and every wing of the mall. So that was my claim to fame. I'm like, bruh, what you want to eat at, man? I know this chick right here. You need to buy shoes? I know this chick over here. She'll give us a discount. Like,
see, that's why I should have known you in the 90s.
I was wild. I don't know that guy no more. I don't know that guy. Bad guy.
So that out the way, you grew up South Carolina.
Yeah.
little bit in Mississippi, and then other parts of the country that don't count because we're on Southern Fried Asian.
No worries.
And then most of your adult life in Virginia.
Yeah.
You do have your Southern Fried bona fides. But I want to ask, I mean, most of the time when I ask this question on this podcast, it's about like, you know, how did your family end up in these parts of the South? We know your dad was in the Navy.
Yeah.
And that's why you moved to all these different places, because every Biloxi, Charleston, Norfolk, San Diego, it's all Navy towns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So let me ask you this, though. What was it like for you as a mixed Filipino kid changing schools every couple years? Were you going through like culture shocks or being in the military? You kind of got used to being in different towns every couple years. Like, what was that experience like for you specifically as a mixed Asian kid?
It did take getting used to. I definitely felt like an outsider. I attribute my love for the pop culture medium due to being that my escape, you know, when you don't know anybody and you're only living someplace 4 years here, 4 years there, you treasure consistency. So if I wanted to check in with my friend Spider-Man, I could do that, you know? So that's where I fell in love with comics, when I fell in love with, you know, film, because they were reliable. I could always tune into what's going on with them. Through that, though, as you get older, the gateway to making friends that I found was that love for those characters. I'm like, oh, you read Spider-Man too? You read G.I. Joe too? Because you and I connected off of the G.I. Joe tip. I love the cartoon. I love the comic books. The G.I. Joe was the first comic book I remember my mom buying at the local exchange on the military base. And that really helped develop that love even more. And then furthering the connection with other kids.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was why I have such an affinity for the medium of pop culture. But because it became my best friend when I'm moving to a different place. Because
I have a similar experience. Like, who I identified with, particularly in like high school, in like teenage years, was not Asian American.
Mm-hmm.
That was not the forefront of my identity growing up, right?
I would agree with that.
If anything, it was like, oh, you like Batman? Oh, you like Star Wars? And for those of y'all listening right now, in like 1994, 1993, it was not like everywhere.
Yeah.
Where like people, you know, at this point, everybody's heard of Marvel. Everybody's heard of Star Wars. But in like 1993, 1994, no one heard of that shit. I mean, they heard of it, but it wasn't cool.
Yep.
That's why, like, you sought out the folks who was into that shit. And that's who you people were.
Hell yeah. I completely agree, dude. Yeah, it was wild. Wild. We would have never thought Marvel was going to get off the ground because DC was killing it. You know, they had that Christopher Reeve Superman. We had 89 Batman with Keaton. You know, DC was just on top. And then, you know, all the animated series, obviously, that they kill it with the DC animation. Yeah, you really had to seek out people that were fans of that type of medium of pop culture. But yeah, as an Asian American, that we were few and far between, at least on the military bases that I was at. But even though it was a melting pot, grew up with a lot of Latinos and African Americans in the pockets that I was in. So that's where I identified with hip hop. And yeah, I would say music also became that glue as well, right, beyond pop culture to, oh, you like Biz Markie too? Yo, what about Big Daddy Kane? Let's get down. You know, that was that glue.
I'm glad you said that, because like that's my generation too. But going back to that idea of being Asian American, you know, particularly like as a military kid on the bases you were at, like Gulfport and Charleston, probably the Navy bases were not as heavily Asian American as maybe when you got to Norfolk, right? And there was probably more.
They were there, but Charleston did have a large population. Once we found it, though, I will say that you had to kind of seek it out a little bit. And then you come to find out that there was these, we had this Asian, or that we had this Filipino organization called ALFINE, which was the acronym All Filipino Neighborhood. It was based on the Air Force base, but I lived on a Navy base. So once my mom met those through bowling, she was in a bowling league, and that's how she met other Filipinos. And then through that, found out that there's this greater Filipino organization. Because also, I will say, growing up back then, and I would say this is part of our community as well, we're like the Joneses, right? You know, certain, you know, we talk down to each other. You know, there's that whole dynamic of fresh off the boat.
Fobs,
you
know, right.
That was a dynamic growing up that, you know, until you bridge that.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to ask you. That's where I was getting at with, like, you know, the whole identity of being Asian American. Because like you said, that wasn't necessarily forefront of who you thought you were growing up. And I talk about this on this pod a lot, is that particularly when you grow up in parts of the country that there aren't a lot of other Asian Americans. Like, it's one thing when you're growing up in like the Bay Area or in like New York City or something.
I envied that.
You got like whole schools with Asians and whatever, and like whole friend groups of Asian people. I feel like you and I are probably more similar in that, like, we were probably the only Asian in a group. And I don't want to speak for you, but I know, like, coming up, it wasn't like a conscious rejection, but I wasn't like, you know, Asian pride, you know, growing up. And not, again, it wasn't conscious. It was just like, that wasn't even an option. It was just like, we were different, but I want to try to be more like him, be more like them, because they were cool. And like you said, whether it was comic books, or for me, it was like basketball or hip hop. And it was everything but like, I didn't like kung fu movies growing up because I was like, oh, that's like, that's whack. Because like, you know, that's embarrassing. You know what I mean? Like, the mouth and the dialogue don't match. It's embarrassing. Yeah. And again, it wasn't conscious. It was just like, I'm going to be more over here because my friends are doing this. You know what I mean? And I didn't grow up. And like back then too, like there was no Asian fetishes in high school because there were no Asian people. So it was like, people weren't like, ooh, I love it. There were no weebs back in the 80s and 90s, at least where I grew up.
Yeah.
So nothing Asian was cool. It was just different. And then I wonder for you, like, like your mom at least sought out like a Filipino community. But did you have like any kind of issues like identifying with Asian Americans? Or did you feel like you always felt like, yeah, this is part of who I am? Because I know you got that Pinoy pride now. Was that always the case?
Dude, you are hitting me in the head. Like, this is deep as fuck right now. This
That's
is
what
so
this
deep.
Podcast is all about.
Yeah. So real talk, but before I get into that part of your question, when you were saying you rejected, you know, kung fu films, I rejected like anime, man. Like,
yeah, same. Like, I wasn't into anime growing up.
Why do I have to like it just because I'm Asian? That was how I felt. Like, I didn't want that. No, I don't have to like that, you know? So.
And like, it wasn't even, but that's the thing. Like, again, I grew up in a small town. I grew up in Luray, Virginia. Which you're familiar with. You're like, you're not too far away from the caverns now. But, you know, again, even like anime at that time wasn't even like, there was nobody who knew about that shit. You know what I mean? Like Akira maybe.
Yeah.
And like Dragon Ball. But again, like my friends weren't talking about that. And there was no internet back then. So you couldn't seek it out. So like Japanese animation was like completely foreign to me until I like went down to the Vibe Beach area, had my first comic book stores and like saw like all the, but by then I was already entrenched in like superhero comics. So it wasn't,
entrenched in superhero shit too,
but I had no connection to like anime or manga.
I feel that. But I like the OGs, Akira, Ghost in the Shell and stuff, but like Dragon Ball Z like took over people, and like I hated the art style. The just everything about it was garbage to me, but everybody's like pushing that shit on me. But no, it wasn't that with it. But anyway, so I totally feel you in like rejecting like elements of the culture. But I always felt out of place. I felt like I wasn't connected with anybody. Didn't know my Asian-ness, didn't know, I knew I wasn't white because I wasn't, well, even though I'm half white, but was never accepted by that community because I don't look it. They just knew I was different. So I just felt like an outcast all the way around. That's why I went into the world of comic books and could relate with mutants and everything because I just felt different. So like when my mom was getting down with these organizations, I would always ask her because I knew I was different and I knew that was Filipino. And I would ask her for Filipino information and she couldn't give it to me. So AOL dial-up. Let me do my research. Let me go to the library. I tried to learn stuff for myself. And then when she got with these organizations, I would talk with all these aunties and uncles to just tell me, well, even though they were my aunt, and that's another Asian thing as well. They're not my aunties or uncles, but as Asians, we treat everybody as family. So I would ask them, you know, tell me about this, tell me about that. And they would do their best. And then I would get, you know, films to watch, but VHS tapes as well. But then I couldn't understand Tagalog, so that was also very difficult because I didn't know the language, and my mom had stopped teaching me the language because she knew I was going to be raised in the States, and that's another triggering thing because wanting to know my culture and wanting to learn Tagalog, but she said when we lived in Italy, she stopped because I was getting my words confused, and that's why I never learned the language.
I mean, that's another thing, right? Like, I think a lot of folks nowadays take for granted because there's the internet, because you know, like,
oh yeah,
it's
yeah.
more acceptable. Like I'm proud of like the generations growing up now, because like my daughter's way more in touch with her Asianness at that's her young awesome. Age than I ever was at that same age, right? And that's because you have more access to it. It's like, because like when I was growing up, I think similar to your mom, like our parents weren't conscious about like identity and all.
Oh, not at all.
But they were about assimilation, exactly. You know, they'll still speak to me in Chinese, and then now they make fun of me not knowing Chinese. But like at the time, it wasn't. They were never conscious. Also, they were working.
Yeah,
they didn't have time to like put me in Chinese school. Growing up in a small town in the South, there were no Chinese schools, so it was just kind of like osmosis. And then, you know, they my dad loves to tell the story. Before I started kindergarten, I was reading and writing and speaking Chinese. Wow. As soon as I started kindergarten, though, it was like it just kind of went away. And that's kind of, and ever since then, I don't have any fluency in Chinese. And I think like what you were saying, like you were talking about wanting to get that information about Filipino, but then you went to AOL dial-up, but that's the 90s. You was already like in your 20s before you, and that's the same thing. Like I didn't get in touch with my Asian-ness until I was in college, yeah. Right? But yeah. Those years as a child, as a teenager in high school, that wasn't something you thought about, right?
Real talk. Yeah. I knew, knowing was different and was mining what I could find, but I always just had a pride for it, but not knowing it as I should, you know? It was just the only identifier I could latch onto, you know? Because I felt outcasted in everything else. Yeah, that's why I so go hard. So now, why you know, with everything I do now, I go hard. Well, yeah, no, that's you know my sad story. You know that I think a lot of us have is Southern fried Asian. So yeah, another thing I will say though, what disappointed me. So yeah, we met other people, Filipinos, but then what became a sad factor is just the me craving culture, asking these other aunties, uncles about it. But them rejecting it, some rejecting it, some being helpful, but some rejecting it because they really were assimilating. You know, seeing assimilation in real time was sad, especially in the South. And just religion became an overpowering thing, which especially as Filipinos, Catholicism, deep South, it's insane. It's ridiculous. So that was hard, and seeing it in real time. And seeing people reject the culture and just seeing just how, you know, they would say, you know, be a good kid, don't do bad things. But then, you know, this is part of like life I hate growing up and seeing like adultery. I saw adultery in real time, you know, being a military kid and you have your military husband that would go off and then seeing that the wife cheat on somebody else or vice versa. You know, seeing that happen. But then another element to that is learning about how Filipinos came to the US and that a lot of them marry these white men to just for a better culture. They didn't really love them, you know? So that really was confusing. You know what I'm saying? Trying to learn to be a good guy, but then seeing how people use the system in a different way, you know? So all of that blends together for me as a learning mechanism growing up.
Like, because you do have the whole military aspect to your identity, to your family, but also like kind of the baggage that goes along with that, because you know that's that all what's tied up in that is like colonization and imperialism and
yes
and you know the assimilation and subjugation. You know, we're kind of like on the heels of Queen Elizabeth passing, and a lot of the talk is about like, sure, you can mourn a head of state passing, but you can't ignore like what that symbol represents. It's the same thing with the American flag. You can salute the American flag and aspire to the ideals of the American flag, but you can't also ignore what that American flag did around the world.
Very true. Very and true.
I think part of the patriotism I feel though is holding our country accountable for its ideal, right?
Agreed.
We ain't perfect yet. I think that's the patriotic thing to do, right?
Completely agree, dude. Yeah. That I think all of us as POCs that feel that have pride in this, that's well said, Keith. I face that conflict all the time, having served and still serving in some capacity with some of the work I do.
We won't reveal. Yeah. we don't want black ops showing up.
Nah, but it's a mixed bag, man. And especially as the creators, you and I, as writers, as journalists, but especially for me as a filmmaker with some of the content I'm working on right now, where I have pride, but it's a difficult thing to do, you know, and write.
You know, I do want to get to that too. I don't let me forget to talk about some of the projects coming up, but you know, just kind of putting a button on that idea of like growing up in a military family and then having the conflict. let me ask you this. When did that switch happen? I know you said you talked to the aunties and uncles and started like learning more about your culture, but like to your point now about how you go hard in the paint for being Filipino, and you know, you got the Show Pal show and everything you do is about Pinoy pride. Like, when did that switch turn on for you though? Like really from like kind of like rejecting it to starting to research and learn about it to being like going hard in the paint.
Going hard in the paint really started with the start of Show Pal show.
Oh, really? So that just the last few years?
Well, I always had pride, but not to the level that I have now to when I started Show Pal show. Because it's at a whole, it's rock levels now. There's Dwayne Johnson and there's The Rock. It's at rock levels now.
That's true, I guess, because a lot of the work you did and you still do on the nerd side wasn't necessarily like, kind of like Nerds of Color's like POC nerds. It was like all nerds. Like it was, as you said at the beginning of the pod, your people are nerds of all stripes.
Yeah.
Right. So I guess that's true. Like Show Pal show was your first foray into like
highlighting
POC focused.
Yeah. Nerd. Yeah. So, and I have to thank you for that forum, man. And with being, you know, one of the founders of the Nerds of Color, I really wanted to give something that focused on that and my love for that side of me. So yeah, I went hard in the paint there to truly answer your question and of when it changed to that rock type level from Dwayne Johnson.
You went from Rocky Maivia to
yeah, from Rocky Maivia to the rock style of levels. Yeah, big fan of his book, because if you recall, you know, there he was, you know, there's Dwayne, but then there's The Rock, where you dial it up 10 more notches. Yeah, it started in high school wanting to learn more, but then kind of falling back, but more so connecting with as nerds, but just always having that hunger to learn and just finding it where I can. But just knowing I was always different, but finding the glue that when we, like we were saying earlier, with like hip hop and pop culture. So that's where my community was. And that was black, yellow, brown, red, you know, multicultural tribe there. And that's really where I identified. And in a Southern Fried portion of it.
You know. Where you and I met, I think, for the first time, it's interesting, was at a milestone gala at Jeppy's.
Like, was it real there? Brief.
That's the first we met.
I could have sworn it was at like a Baltimore. But it is Baltimore.
It was in Baltimore, right. Yeah. But Jeppy's Museum, which was a short-lived pop culture museum in Baltimore, Maryland, run by the guy who runs Diamond Comics, which, full disclosure, I used to work for. But that's where we met, like, real brief. Oh, like, it was kind of just like a, hey, nice to meet you kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't actually remember that point to, like, how we became friends, though. Like,
yeah.
Did we meet at a convention?
I want to say it was a convention.
In between. That,
but I'm
you
curious.
Clearly don't remember meeting at the milestone event.
I don't remember. I just remember, man, I was hanging with Dennis, and I got pictures from the event. I have a bunch of pictures from the event. But yeah, none with you, because then I'm like, now you're like, I need to look, because didn't we meet there?
I don't think we took a picture together, but we were both there. Because like I said, like someone, I don't know, it was Mike Davis or maybe Sean Martin, or someone was like, oh, I know who you need to meet. You need to meet this dude named Patrick.
Yeah.
Like, hey, what's up? And I think maybe, honestly though, it's probably like, oh, he's the only Asian in the room.
Yeah, right?
And so we wasn't like, you know.
Thinking about that now, we probably were the only two Asians at that piece.
So yeah. But that's what I'm saying. I don't think we were like, oh, hey, nice. It was just kind of like sizing each other up. Why they want us to meet?
Before. Yeah, right.
We didn't realize that we put our powers together, right?
You're not like Voltron. Nah, that's crazy. Yeah, I don't remember meeting you there, but nah, that's dope. But I remember.
But I do remember like reaching out to you over like Facebook for something.
Yeah, I think we were connecting mutually online, and then it finally happened at like a show.
Yeah.
But just being a fan of what the NOC was all about, I recall that. I think I started digging him like, oh, you were a Joe fan. I think Joe stuff brought us together.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, just seeing that you did like stuff at Wizard and all that. I was like, oh, shit. Like, you know, there's a cat doing it for the AAPI community. And me, again, as I told you earlier, wanting to always know more about me and myself and as an Asian American and contributing as an Asian American. I just thought that was, dude, I thought you were dope, bro. Thought you were dope. Well, I gotta holler at this other dope cat, man.
Even though we like gave each other kind of like, you know,
I guess I don't even remember that.
We were mean mugging each other at the milestone gala.
But that wouldn't. But I now thinking about it, yeah, I don't remember outside of myself being and seeing any other Asian Americans.
Southern Fried Asian is brought to you by Libsyn.com in more ways than one. Do you have an idea for a great new podcast?
You can bring your idea to life and start your podcast today with Libsyn. Southern Fried Asian has been on Libsyn for years, ever since we started the podcast. Libsyn has everything you need to plan, launch, and grow your own podcast. They provide some of the best resources created by expert podcasters who will show you everything you need to know, like what equipment to use, how to record great audio, how to get your show on platforms like Apple Podcasts and others, and much, much more. And as a friend of the pod, when you sign up with Libsyn, you get your first month of podcast hosting for free. That's right. There's never been a better time than right now to start podcasting. Just go to Libsyn.com. Use the code FRIEND, FRIEND, at Libsyn.com. That's LIBSYN.com. Use the code FRIEND to get started and create your podcast today. Southern Fried Asian is being sponsored by Athletic Greens. I want to talk to you about Athletic Greens. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. Basically, all the things. One of the best things about Athletic Greens is that it's lifestyle-friendly, whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free. It also contains less than 1 gram of sugar and no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, and it still tastes good. Athletic Greens uses the best of the best products based on the latest science with constant product iterations and third-party testing. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day, that's it. No need for a million different pills or supplements to look out for your health. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is partnering with Hard Knock Media to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/emerging. That's athleticgreens.com/emerging to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. The other thing I wanted to ask you, like, you know, again, your Filipino podcast, Show Pals Show, for those of you who don't know, it's where Patrick kind of interviews prominent folks in the community. But that was, like you said, the first time kind of like really highlighting your Asian Americanness. Before that, though, right, like, even though I said your nerd stuff was very much nerds of all stripes, you welcome everybody, I did feel like you still focused more on POCs, though, right? Like there was a there wasn't an attachment, like you were at BlurCon all the time. And stuff like you were definitely entrenched in the Blur community. Like, did you feel like you identified more with like POC as a community more than like specifically Asian American? When did you start like getting into like being AAPI? Like, you now you do an AAPI toy podcast, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, like that focus on specifically like being Asian American.
I would say I always had a hunger to spotlight more AAPIs, but just connection wise, I just knew more. Again, like I said earlier, more African-American Latinos. And so that was easy to highlight them. I always knew I was an other, you know, going back, you know, like I said, I was an outcast, and it was nerd stuff that brought me together with other people. So while I hunger to highlight Filipinos, the ones I knew offhand were few and far between. And
until now, you know, every Filipino person on the planet.
Now I know everybody, which is a blessing. I love it. Yeah, you know, I would cover everybody, but exactly like you said, but it would be more POC slanted just because as a, you know, as POCs, we know our representation isn't out there like that. Yeah. So I wanted to highlight that as best as I could. If I could highlight more Filipinos, I would have, but, you know, the connections weren't as they are now.
Let's talk about that, you know, kind of that shift from being like a consumer of nerd shit to being more in the creative space. I know that at one point you were trying to write comics, you've done some acting. I know you was on The Wire, right? Like that's,
yep.
And then from that, like kind of launching, you know, you've had a couple different iterations that's now blossomed into the Nerds Rule the World, but this kind of like covering the nerd space on the internet, I guess that's the big game changer, right? The internet came and you were like, how do I take advantage of this to expand my worldview, right? So talk about that, how you progressed and became emperor of Nerds Rule the World.
So creatively started, you know, I went into the military. I think we after high school, got out doing special stuff that we cannot talk about that landed me into the DMV area that I'm at now. But always having a passion for the arts, started publishing comic books, writing comic books, because that was always the passion. Again, that was that glue, you know, that I found myself. So definitely always wanted to get into that aspect of it. But then also jumping back into acting, I was acting in high school. So to me, it was, again, when you don't feel accepted by others, you find yourself into characters. I think there's like a real deep rooted thing with all of that, right? So writing comic books, then that community led me to doing a signing at MegaCon when I was writing, publishing comics my own, and then managing talent for the studios. I was in MegaCon and there's some people there that wanted to pick up one of my properties. So I had like a first rights deal with that. But just all that love brought me into cinema again, film, got into acting again. I found that to be the arena, since I've always had this hunger to find myself, my identity, having that resource to create content. I was like, you know what, let me utilize this content to create the things that I've always wanted to see as myself. And I think that's why, like, when I found out about you and all these mediums to do that, that I went hard in the paint and then finding all these different people, but not seeing us highlighted to the extent of how other creators were as Asian Americans, really wanted me to create a forum. And that's where Show Pal Show was born. And through that.
But you've been doing the nerd internet for a hot minute before even Show Pal Show, even before Nerds Rule the World, right? It was New Release Wednesday. You had like a local access show in the DMV area.
Yeah, I met the Jeppy family, you know, Josh Jeppy, Steve Jeppy, Richard Aintney. I think Josh was trying to start this thing called Comic Wow. I don't know if you recall Comic Wow, but it was like Facebook, MySpace meets eBay in a way, slash, you know, just a way for nerds to get together. And I was like, oh, cool, let me jump on. But he was like, man, you'd have to trek out here if you want to be on it regularly. Man, that Baltimore drive, that's too much from a cat that lives all the way here in Woodbridge. So I think I'm going to do my own thing. How about I do this show that spotlights titles that are coming to comic shops every week? And that's where, you know, and that happens on a Wednesday. So I was like, instead of calling it New Comic Wednesday, which was the term back then, I'm going to call it New Release Wednesday, because, you know, they're not just getting comic books. They're getting toys. They're getting all kinds of stuff that the Diamond catalog distributes. So I'm going to call it New Release Wednesday. That's where New Release Wednesday was born. Shopped it to them, but they didn't fully see it. The Jeppies didn't see it at that time. Now they have a previews world.
Right.
Shout out to my boy, Troy, Jeffrey Allen, and Anna Mia, that they now are actually doing that content. So I'm like,
Wait, where's my royalty check?
I'm the guy that gave you that idea, bitch. Yeah, to this day, that, you know, I'm friends with all those cats. I love them. But I was trying to do that with them before they started all the previews world YouTube content. But thankfully, I had some comic book stores local to me that saw it and paid me to spotlight their comic books. So that's how it all started, man, and got born, with talking about new releases and then leading into interviews at comic conventions and shows and all that.
Yeah, that's where I first really got wind of you, after the Mean Mugging at Milestone. I think I saw some of your some of your interviews from like New York Comic Con. And yeah. I think I reached out to you and I was like, hey, let's collab. Let's like start working across both NOC and NRW and start working together on a lot of projects. Because I saw you was like interviewing people at conventions and doing like the press lines and stuff like that. And I was like, yo, this is
Fantastic Forum was beyond the YouTube channel. You were saying the local cable access show that I was doing. I was producing for a local cable access show that streams from here up to New York. It was called Fantastic Forum with Ulysses Campbell. He was the lead producer on that. But yeah, brought me in to be a host and producer. And so I had both those arenas to highlight and spotlight and talk to people in the medium that I love.
But this I feel like, and then over the last couple of years, NRW's really expanded in the sense that, like, one, now you solely run it. It's not like you're doing this for somebody else. This is NRW is your brainchild. Yeah. But like, I feel like over the last couple, maybe it's through your NOC connections or whatever, like the interview, and also the Zoom helps.
Oh yeah, this has totally
the pandemic been a game was changer. Actually a good thing for you.
It was a game changer, dude. Yeah.
But no, totally, but I feel like over the last couple of years, you've been like, NRW's been expanding, blowing up, getting the YouTube interviews.
Trying.
You got all the
not, I mean, NOC got, like, levels, but shit, definitely trying. Definitely
you got trying. Like 6 or 7 podcasts you run in, and you got other cats in the fam, in the NRW fam with shows. Like, how's that been for you over the last couple of years, kind of like expanding what started out as kind of like, you know, covering stuff for Diamond or for these other folks, into like, well, let me just branch out and do this on my own?
It's been fun. It's hard, a lot of hard work. Again, yeah, it's a commitment, and juggling that with all the other professions and that I'm trying to do and build out. you make time, you know, when it's something you enjoy. You know, it's not work. Is that's what like a lot of people like to say. When you enjoy it, it's not work, but it's a lot of work. But it's been real, man, and just trying to, you know, get other people on board that have the same passion as you to commit to a schedule. You know that, you know, seeing what you and the team over at NOC, you know, learning a lot from what you guys have been doing there. But yeah, it's been cool, and it's showing other facets in what we can do. But really, just trying to bridge that gap. To create content and have fun with the stuff that we love, you know.
Speaking of creating content, I feel like you've come full circle finally in that. So let me set the stage a little bit though. Like we mentioned the pandemic. Before the pandemic, 3 years ago, your boy did you a favor, got you a ticket to San Diego Comic-Con, your very first San Diego Comic-Con in 2019.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Pop that Comic-Con cherry for
you did.
For my man Patrick, and you know, like that was, and you know, you went there as just a guest for the first time, and you had told yourself though one of the reasons you was a little hesitant about taking me up on my offer was like, well, I don't want to go to Comic-Con unless I'm invited by Comic-Con to be the guest. I don't want to be your guest, Keith. I want to be Comic-Con International's guest. Well, here we are 3 years later. You went to your second Comic-Con. As a true Comic-Con invited professional guest, because you worked on a comic book for the Lumpia franchise. Talk about how, one, you got involved with that, and two, what was it like being at Comic-Con this time as opposed to when I brought you to Comic-Con?
Bro, damn, man. Oh, you're gonna make a brother cry. Real talk. Real well, talk.
I've seen show about show. It's not that hard to make you cry.
Hey, watch it. You know, as fathers now, we become, I'm an empath. I feel, you know, and then as a father, you know, that turns, you know, dials it up a whole nother notch as well. But nah, bro, I love you for bringing me out there for the first time to the 50th. That was also, you know, amazing to be there for that. But dude, yeah, I can't thank you from the bottom of my heart enough for taking me out to San Diego Comic-Con for the first time. Because yeah, it was always my thing. I don't want to be here unless I have a project. You know, because I do all those shows, but that one, I wanted to make it special. So you made it special because NOC, man, I will always be a nerd of color and rep the squad. And so to be there to take part in, man, the amazing March for Rose that you do. And so to be able to participate in that and just rep the squad, man. And also just kind of get that different atmosphere of an experience that cons.
Yeah, it's unlike any other convention.
Unlike any other. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you for that, brother. This year, man, again, when you finally do something that's really meaningful to you, things will blossom from that. So Show Pal Show was born. And that's where I really dove into representing myself to the fullest, you know, the rock standards, you know, taking it back to what I said earlier, meeting so many amazing Filipinos. Through Show Pal Show, got to interview a lot of different people. And one of the groups I interviewed, and shout out to our very own with the NOC, Lauren Lola, she knew about these cats, the creators behind Lumpia. I had always heard grumblings about them as a, you know, proud Filipino, knowing that there was like this Lumpia movie, but I didn't know that they were making like this sequel to it, and it was going to be even more amazeballs. You know, the original Lumpia movie was a bunch of Filipino kids, and I thought that was dope because as a kid, I was doing that similarly, but not taking it to distribution and, you know, making it out there like that. But it was a very, you know, you heard the buzz about that as a Filipino as a film fan. So I'm sorry if I'm rambling, but Lauren knew these cats, and they had this new film called Lumpia with a Vengeance that was going to premiere at the Hawaiian Independent Film Festival, HIFF. So she put me in touch with them, and dude, that's where it all started. I met them, interviewed them.
She put
you
in touch with
them
just to be on Show Pal Show, not to be part of the crew. Like you were just going to interview them for Show Pal Show.
Yeah, oh yeah, totally. This was had no aspirations of being part of their squad at all. I was like, I want to highlight these cats because I believe in them. I appreciate what they've done for the culture, and let's definitely show them love. So Lauren and I talked with them, and then I had them all on right before, saw the film before it got released at HIFF. They sent us an advanced screener, and just, man, these guys got it together. And going back to what we were saying earlier, you know, as being the only Filipino cat, I always envied, you know, the Bay Area and how all these people knew each other and they all supported each other. And I was like, man, if, you know, I just love what they're all about. So if I can get down with these cats, you know, that also helped build community. So yeah, we had that interview and then we just kind of touched base, and thankful being in this social media generation, we have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, where we could just like keep tabs on each other and big up each other. So that happened post interview, stayed in contact with these cats. It started touring the festival circuit. And then, you know, again, come to find out, you know, as my career as the Show Pal show host and meeting other Filipinos, they're like, yo, you know that cat too. And they're like reaching out, seeing me big up with what I was doing with all that. And so they're like, hey, we got this project we're working on. We're doing comic books. Through that conversation, that interview we had, we heard that you were doing comic books. And yeah, I come from a comic books background. So can you give us some pro tips? So I was helping them, you know, with that aspect. And then one thing led to another. Hey, we're going to do the book that's going to take on what's happening after Lumpia with a Vengeance. You want to co-write with me? And I was like, fuck yeah, let's do this. So I can handle co-writing duties. And that's where the legendary Lumpia Squad was born. And now, fast forward, this year, San Diego Comic-Con, it premiered at San Diego Comic-Con, as well as the film, first Filipino-American film to debut at San Diego Comic-Con.
An official part of the programming.
As an official part of the program, we had...
Y'all even had like a restaurant, Filipino restaurant in the Gas Lamp.
Yep, and that had just opened up like the week prior, so that we're forever tied to the Gas Lamp Lumpia Factory. Love y'all. We had a premiere party there. Premiere of the film, premiere screening. We did a panel, premiered the comic book there. Just we got covered by Variety. There's a bunch of ABS-CBN, bunch of outlets covered everything that we did. So yeah, the community came out. Dante Bosco came out as well. So we had some of the Bosco brothers. Just the Filipino love from the community was on point. And now we made a huge announcement that there's going to be a third film now. And so as part of the comic book squad and as a filmmaker and part of the squad, my duties are now to follow up with these comic books leading into this third film. So put in a lot of work on that. And that's been beautiful. And also announced, because the film has only been, you know, at film festivals, on September 30th, the film is going to open up to limited release nationwide starting September 30th. And in particular, for those that live in the DMV area where Keith and I live, on October 14th, it's going to be playing at the Regal Kingstown for like 4 days. And we're trying to sell out all those shows, planning to do a bunch of signings tied to that. I've got posters, postcards, setting up events to do signings with the Legendary Olympia Squad comic books. Got a bunch of different variant covers for that. Just a lot of promo and just a lot of, man, it's been a whirlwind since San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
But that will be a memorable experience. Dude, I've always been in love with Todd McFarlane. You see his Spider-Man art right behind me. We did an autograph signing in the pavilion hall where all the big pros sign. Directly across from us as we were doing our signing was Todd McFarlane doing his signing. And I had to like go by and say hello to him, man, and be like, yo, here's a copy of my book, bro. One day I was like, I'm going to be just like you. And here it is. And we got to talking a little bit.
It wasn't that's the thing though, right? Yeah. It wasn't one day. It was that day. Think about it. Like, as you always said, wanted to be at Comic-Con for your own project. So it's not one day I'm going to be like you, Tom McFarlane, because look, you are peers, you're equals. You're sitting at a table in the same fucking room, breathing the same fucking oxygen as Tom McFarlane, doing the same shit. You're signing a book. So it's not, I'm going to be like, I am you, motherfucker. and you know, yeah. I see the name card back there, right? Like,
yeah.
The first time I ever went to Comic-Con, spoke on a panel, I forgot my name card. I'm glad you grabbed yours.
I almost forgot too. It was somebody had to remind me because I was just so caught up in the moment. Yeah. We had just announced that we were doing a part 3 of the Lumpia franchise, and they're like, yo, don't forget your card, because our last announcement at the end of our panel. And I was very thankful for that. So
But I'm just saying, you know, dreams come true, because you was there, and not some rinky dink project like what I was at Comic-Con for. You was at this thing, like you said, Variety covered it. You had a premiere party. The Lumpia franchise is growing, right? It started out, like you said, this kind of indie project, but it's got all this hype behind it now. So the Bosco brothers are involved. Like, I think, yeah, shout out to you. It was worth the COVID going to Comic-Con, I feel like, right? Like, you had the super...
Yeah, oh yeah, and yeah, coming off of it, yeah, I did get COVID. So it
was worth it.
It was worth it. I guess you could say it was worth the COVID. But almost jeopardized my Hawaii vacation that my wife would have killed me, because yeah, we had like a gap where I got over COVID coming off of that. And like 2 weeks after San Diego, we then hopped on a plane to go out to Hawaii. So
and you caught COVID again. No, I'm just kidding.
No. But yeah, it's been a whirlwind, brother. And again, I'm so thankful for you, brother, because again, Show Pal Show is like where I put that cape on and decided to rep who I am. And through finally connecting with yourself, that all this other stuff happened. And you are one of those attributing factors to that, bro. So I'm so thankful for you, bro. I love you, man.
I'm waiting for that royalty check. What are you talking about?
Bottom of my heart, bro. But hey, it has now given a drive. So now that I have all this stuff, real talk, the past couple of days I've been trying to book appearances. I've got a couple appearances that I just booked and we'll be making announcements. But like, you know, but pre-COVID, we had the Totally Awesome Asians panel. Mm-hmm. We were planning on doing a bunch of different stuff, but like, dude, I'm ready to go hard in the paint, bro. Like, I want to tag with you. Like, I want to rep for the culture, speak on API stuff. But again, going though also back to earlier in our conversation, I just don't want to do API shit. I want to just rep culturally as POCs and just nerd shit in general, bro. And just talk on toys, talk on whatever, man. Like, I want to collab and do shit with you, man, and the whole squad, and just keep on building, you know, that's it. And our love that this thing that we love brings us all together, no matter what color creed you are.
Well, I mean, the first step is being on Southern Fried Asian finally, so that we got that out the way. I
finally did that.
Well, before we let you go, the one question I always ask everybody at the end of the podcast, it's kind of apropos since we just talked about lumpia, but I always ask everybody about what is the one dish that brings you back home. And particularly, like, you know, I think for you it's unique because, as you said, you have many homes growing up, right? Like, you was in South Carolina, you were in Mississippi, you spent some time in Washington and Italy. So like, this may be a complicated question for you to answer, but if you were to think of like one food item that remind, like, first of all, before you, what is the, what, like, when you think of childhood, right? Because I know you've moved a lot, but when you think my childhood, what's the place that pops in your head?
South Carolina.
It's South Carolina. Okay, so that's the place I need to ask you. Yeah. What's the one dish that brings you back home? It don't got to be like lumpia. It doesn't have to be something your mom made. It could be like, you know, the fried chicken joint across the way. Like, what's one thing that reminds you of like Charleston? Is that where you grew? Or Gooseneck?
Yeah, Goose Creek.
Goose Creek. I'm sorry.
Goose Creek, South Carolina. But people say Charleston because that's the bigger city.
Right. What's the dish that brings you back to Goose Creek?
Real talk, it is a Filipino dish. And real talk, even though I'm part of the lumpia franchise, I like lumpia, but it isn't my favorite. Even Show Pal Show. I'm not a huge fan of Show Pal. I just thought it was a cool name.
You just wanted the pun. You just want to use the pun.
Yeah, Show Pal Show. It's the most simplest dish. It's a bowl of rice and tocino. Tocino is a sweet and sour pork. It's not breaded at all, but it's just a sweet and savory, like, pork cut. It's like cut into very small pieces, but just a little bit of that with white rice and patisse, aka fish sauce, and I'm home. And then a little bit of longaniza too, which is a sweet and sour sausage type dish. But yeah, just a little bit of that in its simplest form is my favorite dish. And that's what I would have growing up as a kid, because my mom wasn't much of a cook and she didn't really cook like white people food. So it was easy to just fry up some tocino and some longaniza and cook up some rice. And then here's a bottle of patisse and there you go. And that would even be a last meal if I was in prison.
Well, yeah, that's the kind of thing, right? It's the same dish. The dish that brings you home is a dish that's going to bring you home eventually.
Very true. Good one.
And real talk, if you eat too much of it, it might be your last meal.
Yeah. Yeah. I just saw the other day, a good Filipino friend of mine, my brother from another mother, he just said he started giving up rice. He's been off rice for like 6 weeks. And I've even had my doctor tell me that I need to give up rice. And I just can't. I don't
that's
see
racist.
How we as Asian people. I just.
That's that racist. Not,
that's
racist.
I just
keto
don't
is racist.
Giving up rice. I'll never give up rice.
Only white people can be keto, right? It's a racist.
Exactly, dude. Like, well, I'll never.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, I'm proud of you and everything that you've done, everything you've built. I know it was some rough waters getting to that point, but now you're here and I appreciate you coming on this podcast. For the folks listening here who may not be familiar with all of the work that you do on the internet, how can they find more about Kuyapi and everything NRW?
Bro, again, so truly honored to be on Southern Fried Asians finally. So thankful for our friendship and looking forward to just blossoming it out as we move along this path called life. But I'm so thankful for you, brother. I love you. For me, if you want to reach out to your boy, if you want to support what I'm doing, it's The Legend Kuyapi on Twitter, TikTok, and IG. Of course, Show Pal Show, where I represent my Filipinx people. And that's S-H-O-P-O-W-S-H-O. And then, of course, at the NRW and at New Release Wednesday, where we like to say, nerds rule the world. And there you go. That's me.
All right.
Appreciate you, brother.
Of course. Again, thank you for being on the podcast. We will catch you on the other side.
You can find me, Keith Chow, on Twitter at TheRealChow, the_real_chow. Follow the podcast at Southern Asians on Twitter and at Southern Fried Asians on Instagram. Go to hardknockmedia.com to find this and all of the podcasts in the Hard Knock Media Network. Subscribe and download Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere you get podcasts. Support us on patreon.com/nerdscolor. Also find us on GoFundMe. As always, Southern Fried Asian is co-produced by Jess Vu. Email us, thenerdsofcolor@gmail.com. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thenerdsofcolor. And until next time, keep it Southern Fried, y'all.